Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
The board of directors at the NAACP voted to endorse marriage equality, which is, you know, a historic achievement, and we couldn't be more pleased and proud.
We have to choose our faith over our love for our African-American leaders, and I will tell you now, and I will always tell you, we will choose our faith every single time.
It's almost like we're being punished for the fact that we serve a lot of people and that we don't ask for baptismal certificates at the door.
Lutherans who are married to Catholics love Issues Etc.
The church is one foundation. It is Christ her Lord.
The account from Matthew's Gospel, the 27th chapter, this simple verse, and I think it is unique to the crucifixion accounts. This is Good Friday when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice. He gave up his spirit. And at that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rocks split, and the tombs broke open. Now, at least according to the headlines, some researchers believe that they have found or at least been able to narrow down the event that's described there, namely the earthquake or the seismic activity as they refer to it, by studying core samples of a beach in near the Dead Sea, I believe. They say that they may have been able to find some of the activity that could have been associated with that earthquake, and they say helps us date the crucifixion of Jesus more accurately. Do we need earthquake activity to date the crucifixion of Jesus? What are the problems inherent in trying to find a date for the crucifixion of Jesus? Dr. Andrew Steinman will be joining us for the first half hour or so of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We are coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, the 29th of May. Dr. Andrew Steinman will be our guest to talk about this earthquake and the dating of Jesus' crucifixion. Then we're going to review a Pentecost sermon preached Sunday by Pastor Joel Baisley of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Dearborn, Michigan. A little sermon review here on Issues Etc. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is going to join us from the Ruth Institute. Of course, the big news is that a lawsuit has been filed by several Roman Catholic institutions against the Health and Human Services mandate. They say it violates their religious freedom, and they're catching flack for it. We'll see what Jennifer thinks about it in the second hour of the program. A little bit later, in the second hour, we're going to answer the question, is Christianity feminine or masculine? Many have decried the feminization of Christianity. We have here on Issues Etc. Is the proper remedy for that to make Christianity more manly? Or are we simply playing into the stereotypes of gender in our culture and imposing them on the church? Dr. Mike Horton of the White Horse Inn will be our guest in the last half hour or so of Issues Etc. Now, you can join us as well. Our call-in number live this Tuesday afternoon, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can send us an email here in the studio. We get them in real time, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @issuesetc, and we'll be happy to take your questions or comments for Dr. Andrew Steinman as we talk about an ancient earthquake and Jesus' crucifixion. Now, the events that we find there in all of the Gospels correlate to one another beautifully. The actual events of Jesus' crucifixion. The date? Well, of course, the Gospel writers weren't writing history in the same sense that we think of it, where they're trying to find a date and a time, but are the dates surrounding Jesus' crucifixion, are they something we can discover? Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University, Chicago. He's author of the book From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. Dr. Steinman, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be back, Todd.
As far as you can tell, and you've actually done extensive research on many of the dates in the Bible. How much does the latest research, geological research, I should say, from Geology Review, and their narrowing down of seismic activity in and around that time, how much does it add to the accuracy with which we may be able to date the crucifixion of Jesus?
Well, it doesn't add anything. It confirms, actually, what we already know, that it was in A.D. 33. The day and the date have been known for some time. Most scholars agree, and I would certainly be among them, that is the date of the crucifixion on Passover of that year. So this is a kind of confirmation of what the Gospels say, that at Jesus' resurrection there was this earthquake.
Okay, so what are the challenges, even in the texts of Scripture itself, for dating the crucifixion of Jesus? How would you characterize them?
Well, some of the challenges are challenges that I think have been with past misinterpretations of statements in the Gospels. For instance, in this article perpetuates this, that they think that the three synoptic Gospels have one view of the day of the crucifixion, where John, in his gospel, has a different view of the day. And I think that's actually a misreading of a statement or two that John makes. I think they all point to Jesus being crucified on the Passover. Another challenge is of a similar type, where oftentimes scholars or lay people reading the Bible misread passages that talk about the day of preparation of the Passover. John uses this phrase a lot, and they take it to mean the day to prepare for the Passover. What they don't understand is day of preparation was a technical term for the day before the Sabbath of any week. And so the fact that the crucifixion took place on a day of preparation before the Sabbath means it took place on a Friday, because the next day, Saturday, would be the Sabbath. So it's those kind of misinterpretive moves that people have made in the past that have clouded the issue. And once you clear those out of the way, it becomes pretty obvious what the date the gospel writers, all four, are pointing us at.
So all four, if read, if properly understood, the way in particular John uses his terminology, writing to a non-Jewish audience, all four of them present Jesus crucified on a Friday.
Yes. And they're all very clear about this, that the next day is going to be the Passover, is going to be the day of preparation of the Passover. It's going to be a Saturday. They're all very clear that the Feast of Unleavened Bread is coming up. And, of course, that's the 7 days following Passover itself. So they're all very, very specific on this. And I think when read correctly, they all point in the same direction.
Someone might be asking, why can't we just, you know, we have, you know, the ability to kind of roll back the dates. Why can't we just roll back the date from our present time to determine what would have been our way of reckoning dates for Jesus' crucifixion?
Yeah, well, there are several challenges. One is that we've changed calendars over the years. We currently use what is known as the Gregorian calendar. Before that went into effect under Pope Gregory the Great, the Western world was using what we know as the Julian calendar, which is very similar, but is different by one day every 400 years, and that doesn't sound like a lot, but over several millennia, you have to be careful. And then on top of that, the Jews in Jesus' day, as they had been since Old Testament times, were not following that type of calendar at all. They were following a calendar that synchronized the phases of the moon with the Earth going around the sun once a year, what we call a solar-lunar calendar, and their months weren't exactly the same as our months. Our months are usually 30 or 31 days, except for February. Their months were 29 or 30 days, and every once in a while they'd add a leap month instead of a leap day. So all these kind of calendar differences mean that we can't just roll back our current calendar and get there. We have to take into account how time was reckoned in the ancient world and what changes have taken place in the reckoning of time and the reckoning of years in between our day and Jesus' day.
So if we take the four Gospels at their word that Jesus is crucified on the Passover, then is it as simple as dating the Passover within a window of certain years and then trying to pick which year best fits events for Jesus' crucifixion?
Yeah, that's basically it. We need to find a year when Passover would fall on a Friday. And then, of course, the Feast of Unleavened Bread would begin on a Saturday because, the next day clearly was a Saturday. So we have to find years that meet that criteria. Then there's another criterion, and that is that we have to find those years during the time that Pontius Pilate was procurator of Judea, and that's a window of a number of years. And when we narrow that down, we come to only 2 years that meet that requirement, either AD 30 or AD 33. And there have been advocates for both, but there are plenty of problems with AD 30 because of other factors. And so most scholars rule out AD 30 and take AD 33. And indeed, now this earthquake, which says that, it probably occurred in 33, helps us confirm what most scholars already knew, that it happened in the year 33.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the dating of Jesus' crucifixion in light of a story of an ancient earthquake that has been dated to that very day. Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest. It's Tuesday afternoon, May the 29th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Thanks for supporting the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. through the charitable grant program Thrivent Choice. We received more than $15,000 last year through Thrivent Choice. Our goal this year is to raise more than $20,000 through Thrivent Choice. For more information on how you can designate funds to Lutheran Public Radio, look for the Thrivent logo under the donate page at issuesetc.org. Please support Issues Etc. in 2012 with Thrivent Choice.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Ah, the sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30. And find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest. We're talking about an ancient earthquake that has been connected to the crucifixion of Jesus and may confirm the date already arrived at by other means for Jesus' crucifixion, which I believe would be April 3rd, 33 AD. Now, before the break, Dr. Steinman, you mentioned that when you try and find a Passover that falls on a Friday, as we reckon Fridays, then you get two candidates, 130 AD and 133 AD. You said that there were significant problems with the first one. Why not 30 AD?
Well, first of all, you have the problem of Jesus was about 30 years old when he was baptized. He was baptized, and, you know, the Bible gives us all the data about it was a certain year of Tiberius Caesar and so forth, and we can do that calculation. And he would have had to have been baptized in the summer of 29. That it makes the crucifixion too early in the spring of 30. That would only leave a few months, really, for all the events of the Gospels, and you just can't shove them all in that short of a time frame. And so because of that, 30 really becomes almost an impossible date unless you do a lot of fiddling with the explicit statements in the Gospels that tell us, for instance, that there were a number of Passovers during Jesus' ministry, which, of course, indicates a couple of years passed, and things like that. And so if Jesus is baptized in the summer of 29, he has about 3.5 years of ministry, then 33 A.D. fits quite well, where 30 A.D., you just, like I said, you have to kind of do a cut and paste on the Gospels to kind of make it all fit in by the year 30.
So you've got kind of the parameters of Pilate's governorship, so to speak. You have the chronological information about Jesus' public ministry. You have the information about his age or his approximate age when he begins his public ministry. And you have the gospel writers telling us that that Jesus is crucified on a Friday, a Passover. Is that basically your data set for figuring this out?
That plus the reign of the high priest. You know, we know Caiaphas was the high priest, so it also has to happen during his time. So that further, you know, helps kind of solidify this. But that's the basic data set we have to work with.
So when it says, I know that there are also obstacles or problems with dating the birth of Jesus. How important is the date of his birth in any of these considerations, or is it less important?
It's less important. It has a bearing, but really you can do this calculation without knowing the date of his birth, since we know the date of his baptism. You know, we're told 15th year of the reign of Tiberius was when he was baptized, and he was about 30. Now, we could calculate back about 30 years and know the approximate date of his birth, but since Luke just says about 30, we have to always be a little cautious of just counting back. We have to have other things to help us get the date of his birth. But counting forward is really easy because we can start with, you know, the reign of Tiberius Caesar and work forward.
Doesn't John give us, John, not the other gospel writers, but John, doesn't he give us three Passovers during Jesus' public ministry?
Yes. He gives us two and implies another one. And so that pretty much cinches the 3 years. But in addition, there are indications in the Synoptic Gospels of spring coming and going a couple times. For instance, we have the account of the disciples plucking grain in the as they're going through the fields. Well, the grain ripened in the spring, so we know that that event had to happen in a spring. They were called to be disciples before that happened. Other things happened afterwards. So, you know, there are also kind of confirmations of what John said if you kind of know the agricultural cycle and the other signals in the Synoptic Gospels that kind of mesh with the more explicit statements in John's Gospel.
You mentioned this earlier when it comes to the earthquake activity. There are actually two recorded by Matthew. One is at Jesus' death, and the other is at his resurrection, which would have only been, well, I guess as we reckon it, a day and a half apart. Is that correct?
That's right. It's interesting that they don't mention this in the article, that there are two earthquakes, and perhaps geology isn't precise enough on this point to distinguish whether there were one or two that close together. Since, you know, earthquakes are often known to have aftershocks, we experience that in our own day. And so which they found and which they're referring to is hard to say. But I think it's an interesting confirmation, despite the fact that the article doesn't take this as seriously as it ought. Nevertheless, it offers us some nice confirmation of what the Gospels say. And the article does note that nowhere else in the ancient record are these earthquakes recorded. So now we have, you know, kind of verification of the accuracy of the Gospels, that, you know, they record these earthquakes, and there actually were earthquakes at that time.
Since we've talked a bit about that second earthquake and therefore Christ's resurrection, I'm sure our listeners, since we're on the subject of his crucifixion, would want you to explain how it is we get, by Jesus' prediction, 3 days in the tomb, but then, of course, it is really only, as the hours would be counted, a little more than 24 hours in the tomb. How do you sort that out with a couple minutes here?
You have to understand how they counted. They counted days inclusively. So 3 days, they count the day of his crucifixion, they count Saturday, and then they count Sunday morning when he rises. This is a very common way of counting in the ancient world, and we find it elsewhere in the Bible, and Jesus himself indicates this. For instance, when he gets reports of being threatened by Herod Antipas, he says, "I'm going to go about my business today, tomorrow, and the third day." Now, we would say 2 days later, but he calls it the third day. And so it's the same way here. We might say he was crucified on a Friday, and in our parlance, he rose 2 days later on Sunday. They would say on the third day. And that's, of course, what's come down to us from the Gospels and is repeated in the creeds.
So there's no reason, as some Christians have, who are troubled by this, have asserted that we need to move Jesus' crucifixion back a day and a half or a full day in order to have three full 24-hour calendar days of Jesus in the tomb.
Yeah, no, there's no reason for that. There are several passages in the Old Testament where you can see this type of reckoning going on. For instance, in the book of Esther, Esther asks everybody to fast forward 3 days, and then she'll go and see the king. And as a matter of fact, she goes in on the third day. She doesn't wait till the third day is ended, as the modern reader might read that. We have the same thing in the Joseph story in the book of Genesis, where he talks about holding his younger brother Benjamin for 3 days, but he actually releases him before the third day is up. Again, this goes with the way they're counting days, and they're just counting differently than we are. And it's a reminder, again, that we can't read the Bible as if it's modern literature. It is indeed ancient literature, and we have to understand what the ancient authors and readers would have understood by things at times, rather than what we think they might mean.
With only about 30 seconds here, having done as much work as you have on the dates in the Bible, not just these New Testament dates, but Old Testament as well, it must be just a little gratifying to find this geological confirmation of what you've been able to uncover.
Yes, it is. It's always nice to have confirmation of things, and I think it's just wonderful that these type of things can be found by scientists, even if those scientists don't necessarily take the Bible at face value all the time. Nevertheless, it's kind of gratifying that just honest science forces them at times to reconcile themselves with the clear statements of Scripture.
Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University, Chicago. He's author of the book From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. You can purchase From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Steinman, thank you.
Very welcome, Todd. It's always a pleasure.